Welcome to the Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. My name is Sean Fouché. This is episode 180 for November 2nd of 2022. We're recording this a little bit later in the week because tonight was the first release of the college football playoff rankings, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. But joining us on this week's podcast, we got TCU Hall of Famer Shannon Brazil. How you doing, Shannon?
I'm doing great, man. Great week. Glad to be on, guys. Happy Tuesday. Looking forward to this weekend. Bringing in the tortilla-throwing Texas Tech Rebels, whatever the hell their name is.
It's a good way to describe them, whatever the hell their name is. I like that. We'll go with that. Also joining us, TC former player Nathan Hernandez. How you doing, Nathan?
Doing great. How about them Frogs?
Yeah, I tell you what, 8-0 feels oh so good. It is so nice. And rounding out, sorry, go ahead, Nathan.
I was going to say my blood pressure goes up every week, though.
You know, I made a comment on the board that I really have enjoyed this season. I just wish I didn't have to rush out every Sunday morning and buy a new bottle of Tums. But, you know, it's okay. Again, 8-0, it's worth it. I'll throw down the $6 for a bottle of Tums every week. It's okay. And rounding out this week's podcast panel, we have got, welcome back, Mr. Nick Howard.
Hey, what's going on? I'm glad that everybody's joined on the train. Max Duggan for Heisman. Thank you.
You've been waiting a year to say that, haven't you?
Yes.
We'll get into that a little bit later on, but to get started, TCU goes into what historically has been a really tough place for the Frogs to play, and that's Morgantown, West Virginia. Comes away with a 41-31 win. And quick shout out here, Nathan almost nailed the prediction last week. I think you put 41-33, so good job on that one. And in the process, TCU comes away 8-0, absolutely devastates the Barstool guys' betting pool, and at the same time is looking forward to what is looking like a possibility of getting into the college football playoffs, and we'll talk a little bit more about those initial rankings that just came out a little while ago. But let's talk about this game. Shannon, we've been talking for the last couple of weeks. This team kind of seems to be the story of two halves, and the defense has been the focus of this. And, of course, on Saturday, there was no deviation from that plot, and the defense comes out, and it once again kind of looks like it's slow going, but then makes that adjustment in the second half, and they only let up one touchdown. It's the only touchdown, yep, second half touchdown they've let up in the last three games.
Like I said, it was going to be tough to play West Virginia at home. And, again, they only give up 7 points in the second half. Yes, we let off a lot of points, a lot of yards. But, again, it takes a while for some reason late in the season for this defense to kind of gel, you know, again, to this new system. Now I'm kind of looking at it, and it looks like, you know, the team we play come in the first half, and they see we must have some weak spots that they do a great job picking out during the week. And then what we seem to do is go in at halftime and adjust to what they've adjusted to, leaving them no room to adjust to us, if you will. So I think that's what's going on. It's a checkers type of deal, chess, if you will. But we seem to get it right second half. That's the only thing I can think of, because I'm like, man, we're letting off too many points and we're doing too much, but I feel like we do have holes in our defense, and our opponents are seeing that. They're being coached up on it, where our weak spots is with this defense, and they're exploiting that. And then we just go in at halftime and just change up the game plan with defense, and thus we play a lot harder, leaving us room to kind of ball out in the second half. But I will say, guys, this is no shock to if you're an ex-football player, if you're a true fan, if you followed us, how we play in Morgantown for forever, either it's going to be very close or they usually kick our butts. That's just how it's been. So, hey, we got out with the dub. That's all that matters right now, guys. Every game's not going to be pretty. Again, kudos to the coaches for making adjustments and the players for reacting to those adjustments. And we come out with a victory. That's all that matters. So I'm thinking like a player. I'm thinking like the team, on with the Nets. I'm forgetting about that. We got the dub. I'm good. Let's move on.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think it's one that I rarely have seen actually posted about either on Twitter or even on the boards. And that is that the point you're making is that it's not so much that the TCU defense is coming out and some people have called it a rather inept first half. You're actually putting the onus more on the offensive planning of the opponent rather than necessarily what we're doing on defense. And I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah, I mean, you have to because, you know, you look at it, you know, as man, okay, you know, we play so solid in the second half, but you guys, we have to understand, like they said, those guys are Division I players as well. Those coaches get paid a lot of money as well. Their job is to figure out how to beat us. And so the only thing I can do besides looking at the game, and I'm pretty sure this, I'm willing to bet something on it that it's the video film, and it's big because once you find one or two holes or even players who don't play certain things well, those guys exploit that, right? And so what happens, what we do, we figure that out because a lot of times you guys say, why won't they cover that tight end? Why won't they cover this? Because that's why we've seen certain guys keep popping open. Well, we go back in, we make adjustments from the guys up in the sky. They're making adjustments right there on the paper. They're getting ready for halftime as they see this stuff. And so that's why I believe you guys, just being a football guy, being in the locker room, thinking about halftime adjustments because I've been there. I think that's what's going on. But I can't put my finger, but that makes logical sense to me. And thus lies why we come out and either shut people off or we allow very minimal points.
Well, let me ask you this because I know this is – explain this to somebody, the typical fan who hasn't played college ball or, you know, football at this particular level. The adjustments that we're seeing at halftime obviously are working. I mean, there's no question about it. Why couldn't those similar adjustments happen during the first half? Is this a situation where just the coaching staff just doesn't have access to the players like they do and the attention of the players like they do during halftime? Or is this something else?
Well, it's a little both because you got to realize the game is so fast. They're doing certain things. And even though you make certain adjustments, you don't have enough time. See, the defensive coordinator's on the field or he's in the box. I don't know how our situation is. I think he's on the field. But the guys in the sky, they're jotting down everything, every play, every down, every, you know, every penalty, all that stuff. And so what happens is once they get together real quick in the locker room, they're able to go over what they're seeing to the D coordinator because you guys got to realize he's on the field with us. And how it goes is when you're on the field, our coach used to tell us, you see things before I see things. You're out there. You see it. Tell me what's going on so that I can make adjustments. Well, if I'm on the field and defensive coordinator's on the field, I see better than he sees because he's looking at it from the side. He doesn't see everything. The guys up in the press box, they see it all from top down. So when you bring all that together, you're able to make better adjustments at halftime. You can twerk some things during the game, but the best adjustments are going to be done in the locker room.
Yeah, I think
because
that's a
they have
point.
A board, they have a board. They have things they do after the head coach speaks. They break out into their groups. They go over things on the board, and you can sometimes you have to visually see it. You're playing here. You need to be here. Blah 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 blah. That's football strategy. That's how it goes down. So now players say, "Oh, gotcha." And so with coming out, they still got to play with effort and all those things. But now we've got a true adjustment, and I believe that's what you guys are seeing in the second half.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, it's just I think we got a lot of Monday, you know, quarterbacks here sitting around just trying to figure out, okay, well, what exactly aren't we doing correctly? And I think you've kind of nailed it. I think it's a combination between the fact that, hey, we are playing really good offenses. And I think anybody who saw what Kansas State did to Oklahoma State this last weekend, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the fact that this TCU defense is shutting down these offenses, these prolific offenses, the Oklahoma States, the Kansas States, Oklahoma, in the second half of every single one of these games, West Virginia, is a testament to just how good this defensive staff is ready and able to actually work. But not only that, I think another point you made there, Shannon, is another good one. You got to have the leaders on the field, right? This doesn't work if it's all about the coaching staff, right? It has to actually start with what the players are seeing and able to identify and be able to communicate back to their coaching staff to be able to get those adjustments at halftime. So it's an overall, you know, hate to say, you know, it's a team effort, but it really is. It starts with the guys and the leaders on the field, and then it ends up with the guys up in the box. And I think that's a really good observation.
Well, I would challenge guys, just and the fans, if you really want to know, I would challenge guys, if you're watching defense, but watching, just look at some of the things we're doing wrong. Look at the players. Look at their adjustment. Like, even if you want to focus in on a cornerback, focus in on somebody that you feel is blowing the game. And then watch the second half and see his adjustment then. And I think it'll click to you.
Yeah. Well, Nathan, let me get you in on this real quick. Offense. Offense sputtered a little bit on Saturday. But overall, this offense has been pretty prolific all season long. And it is one of those things that, you know, I think can be attributed to a couple of factors. One, obviously, and Nick, we're going to shout out Max Duggan and sing his praises. But I think this really kind of boils down to this receiver core. I think this receiving core has done an amazing job stepping up this season.
Yeah, you know, we added, I think it was Wiley or Spivey that we added from the transfer
Wiley.
Portal. Wiley, yeah. Adding him was a huge gain, you know, finally getting some size on the inside. We've had speed for a long time. That's never been an issue. But sometimes you just kind of need that bigger body that's going to go up, make a catch, make a good catch in traffic. We've seen him do that plenty of times this season. Kind of how Oklahoma did with Mark Andrews against us in that Big 12 championship game. They just had a big body that you kind of can't cover with the linebackers that are you see throughout the Big 12. So adding him in there, getting some size, you know, our outside receivers are playing to the size that they are and they're playing to the size that they should play to. They're not being selfish. And then we're not relying on our inside speed too much to the point where we used to always run the screen game and we used to hit it over and over and over and over again. We're not doing that as much. There are some times where, yes, we make some boneheaded play call. I'm not going to lie, that last second to last drive where we just threw the ball three times in a row.
Well, but okay, let's be honest. All three of those passes, all three of those receivers were there, right?
They were there.
I mean, those plays were there, but you had one that fell down, right?
Yes.
One that dropped the ball. And one that just the defensive lineman just made a good play and tipped the ball at the line.
Yeah, but my thing is you don't put it in that position to happen. Keep the ball on the ground, run it out. And for me, our biggest offensive success has been our run game. Like, yeah, we're getting players open down the field. Quentin Johnson's being Quentin Johnson. Wiley, Darius Davis, and Tay are fast, but it's our run game that's opening all that up because they have to load the box for them, and then that's when we're getting the one-on-one matchups that we want, where Max can toss it up, and he's doing a great job with that, making catchable balls, catchable passes. But it all starts with that run game, in my opinion, because one, we can control the clock, make them use their timeouts like we should have did at the end of that game, but whatever, and it wears down on defenses. Like SMU did to us last year, where you just wear them down with a run, and it's demoralizing. Not being able to stop the run is the most frustrating thing ever. Like, you can toss it up to a receiver, and he's going to make catches throughout the game, whatever it is. But if they're just getting 5, 8, 15, another 6, like, it just, like, as a defense, you just get frustrated, and that's when you see them kind of go at each other. Because everyone's panicking to figure it out. Like Shannon was saying, like, you know, you can only adjust so much on the fly. It's a fast game, especially with the speed that we play at. It's hard to make those adjustments mid-drive alone. And so I think our run game is what's establishing in that. And then you'll see it at the end of the game, our running backs are starting to get first downs on the first play, whatever we had. Which game was it where we had freaking 4+ 60-yard touchdowns? Was it?
Well, I mean, this one we had, 3 over 50?
Yeah, so it's like...
Was that the Oklahoma game?
It was Oklahoma. Yeah. It's the run game for me. I love it. And we're sticking to it for the most part. I mean, we have some times where we get a little fancy and get away from it, but for the most part we have been sticking to the run game like we should.
And Nathan, to your point, great point, it also helps your defense out because they're not getting on the field fast. At some back in the day, we used to slow it down a little bit because we know we can move the ball. We would run the run game, kind of milk that clock, give your defense some time, but when you're quick scoring, and, you know, we're going back out there pretty fast, and then now we're getting in a shootout. At some point, when you're up two touchdowns, something like that, you got to control the clock. You got to control the game. You got to give your defense a blow so they can come out fresh and fly around and make some plays for you. So, to your point, they sometimes need to slow it down. I know we're a fast offense, but you have to, in certain instances, when your defense is balling and you know they can make some stops for you, slow it down, help them out, give them a blow versus trying to make the quick strike all the time.
And I'll say the biggest unit surprise for me this year was our offensive line.
Oh, agreed. 100%.
I feel like Sonny Dykes has an offense where he has a bunch of plays where there's a bunch of home run hitters, where I feel like his offensive mindset is off the charts, to where it's really surprising everyone in the Big 12. But like you said, it's the way they're conserving, the way that they're disguising everything that set them apart from every team in the Big 12 right now.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see. And, you know, Garrett Riley gets – I don't know how much credit Sonny Dykes gets for the offense as opposed to Garrett Riley, but Riley's done an amazing job, absolutely has done an amazing job with this unit. And I agree. I think what's really given those receivers an opportunity to really shine this year has been the running game. But I want to kind of go back to the receivers just a little bit. There is a marked improvement in the wide receiver core when it comes to blocking, when it comes to the selflessness selflessness of the wide receiver core that we saw as opposed to the last few years. And yes, to your point, Nathan, absolutely, that run game has got to be there in order to kind of open that up. And the run game has been really, really good. And Shannon, you're right. In years past, we used that run game to kind of milk the clock and give the defense some time. But I will give Riley some credit here. When those long balls are there, when those one-on-one matchups are there, he is not afraid to pull that trigger. And if that means that we have a two-play, 80-yard touchdown drive and the defense is back out there after only having a minute or two on the bench, then so be it. He's going to do that. And I think in the last couple of years, Patterson would never have allowed any of his offensive coordinators to do that. He would have been in there screaming in their ear, give my defense some time to sit, run the ball, which would have been fine if the offensive line was playing like they are this year. And they haven't been in the past, and they have this year. And so it's been a lot of fun to watch. And seeing Miller and DeMarcado, Bailey with an amazing touchdown run in this game, it's been a lot of fun to watch those guys really kind of step up and put points on the board. And Nick, I think it's time to talk about Max Duggan.
What do people want to know about him?
Why don't you tell them why Max Duggan should be in New York for the Heisman Trophy?
The kid is a stud. He's just a PT peer. I stole that from Dick Vitale. He's a PT peer. He came with his suit. He's ready to show the people that what he's all about, and he's been doing it all year long. So I think he deserves a shot to go out with a bang in his senior year and get an award at least the Davey O'Brien or Maxwell, at least, but I don't know about the Heisman, but still Max for Heisman.
I would love it if he would bring the Davey O'Brien award back to TCU. That would be amazing. But, you know, Nick, it can't just be Joel Klatt out there actually singing his praises. Max Duggan has been phenomenal all season long. And here's a guy who goes out, loses his starting job to Chandler Morris. Again, team player out there helping. Of course, Morris goes down in the Colorado game, comes in, leads this team. And even to Chandler's credit, he is a team player as well. Those guys are backing each other up on the sideline nonstop, and I love to see it. Max is dinged up. We don't have a bye or an off week from here on out. And we saw him dinged up a little bit in West Virginia, but he's going out there. He's getting first downs. He's not sliding. When the game is on the line, when there is a fourth down and a yard or 2 yard to seal the game, we're not punting. We're putting the ball in Max Duggan's hands.
Yeah. It definitely, he's one of those tough kids that's just going to go. It's like he knows what's at stake, and he's just going to go out there and give it his all every game. It's kind of like seeing Chandler and Max, is seeing how the two communicate. It's kind of like what we saw when Bama had Tua and Jalen Hurts. Those guys don't care who starts. They just want to go out there and win ball games and do something special at TCU this year.
Man, that's a good analogy. And it is something special to watch, and it's been a lot of fun to watch these guys actually operate this offense. So,
guys, one of the obviously if you've been through TCU, you saw the high technology rehab stuff that they have. But I tell you, that cryo machine, that underwater treadmill, and all the fancy gadgets—they got all that stuff for a person. For one person, is a person like Doug. I'm telling you, man, because the way he takes the beating. And the way he comes back, the way he runs, the things he's—I mean, he's a running quarterback, and he's not going to do much sliding. He's going to do what it takes to win. And so, I can only imagine what that guy's doing to his body during the week. He probably gets more stuff done to his body, especially without a bye, knowing that we don't have a bye, than any player in that freaking building. So, kudos to that young man. I love his heart. I'm with you, Nick. If he wins these next two games, and I feel like if he comes out, and he dominates Texas. And he really gives, I think, without a shadow of a doubt, they got to start. They got to at least put him on the ballot, man. It's just, if he does that, which I know he can do, I know he can do it, because we've got to play rail at home, and then we go to Texas, and that's the game that's circled for everybody, I guarantee you. And if he does his magic, you got to put him on.
I know he's definitely looking for that revenge against Gary. Gary didn't use him right. Sonny's proving him wrong,
Well, that's one way to look at it.
Yeah.
I hope he goes into that game with a chip on his shoulder. I don't really sense a lot of animosity between a lot of the players on this particular team and Gary Patterson. I might be wrong. They might just be really good at hiding it. But, I hope they go into that game with a chip on their shoulder. But we do have one game before we get to Texas, and we definitely don't want to overlook the Red Raiders, or whatever the hell their name is, as Shannon put it at the beginning of the podcast. We definitely got to focus on them, and we'll come back to talk about the Red Raiders at the end of the podcast. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit. Before we talk about New York and ballots and everything else, let's talk about tonight's initial release of the College Football Playoff Committee's rankings for the first time of the 2022 season. And I think a lot of TCU fans were coming in with, higher expectations than they probably should have, because I think a lot of people have forgotten how 2014 felt. But TCU comes in at number 7. Number 7, jumped by the likes of Alabama. So your top 4 are Tennessee, Georgia. It's not Clemson, sorry. Tennessee, Georgia. Help me out here. Who's the third one?
Ohio State.
Golly. Freaking Ohio State. And Clemson. Followed by Michigan, Alabama, and TCU. Now, on paper, TCU has the hardest strength of schedule among any of the undefeated teams. And that's even considering the fact that Colorado has no freaking pulse. And so, between the on-paper resume, TCU should definitely be in the top 4. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But they have this eyeball test that they keep throwing out here, and TCU has never done well in the, quote, eyeball test. So I'm going to throw it to you guys. What do you think, outside of just simply winning, or do you think that that's all it's going to take, what do you think TCU needs to do to get into the top 4 at the end of the season?
Well, my take on it, and I'll turn it over because I don't have much to say about it, but you just said the word a while ago. But I could only imagine, and we can guess, how many times in those meetings do they use the word but when it comes to TCU? TCU has done this and done this. Well, but they don't better. TCU did this and did that. Well, but then it happens. It's crazy how the statue just on paper, our resume stands out, but we find a way, they find a way to shaft us every single time. So all we got to do, I'm now talking like a coach, we just got to control our own destiny. Went out, do what we needed to do, take it one game at a time, try to play as well as we can. But our conference is pretty strong. I mean, somebody said it's up there with the SEC, like they're going back and forth. We have a strong conference this year. I don't care what's happened in the past. There's another but it is what it is. And I just could be a fly on the wall and see how many times the three or four people or whatever may fight for us, but then the rest of the room, well, but they butt us out of it every time.
Things that need to happen. I'll tell you two things need to happen. Just let go ahead and let Alabama play Georgia. We know Georgia's going to beat them, so there's two losses for Bama. And then go ahead and just have the Ohio State Michigan game, and then one of those teams are going to lose, and then you got TCU in there, so you're good to go. We just need two
TCU
losses.
TCU at number five.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. We need one more in there. Somebody else is going to lose.
Oh, it's possible. I don't know. Is Tennessee and Georgia play? I don't know much about the SEC schedule. So,
I think if they...
What was that, Nathan?
Oh, sorry. I thought Nick was talking. I think that...
Oh, I think we lost Nathan there. Well, hopefully Nathan will come back in, because I do have a question for him, considering the fact that he was part of the 2014 team that did get snubbed by the initial college football playoff rankings. So we'll kind of get in. Nathan, Nathan's
Tennessee
back. How
does,
about that?
I'm sorry. Tennessee does play Georgia November 5th. So there's your loss right there, Nick.
Yep.
Sorry, I don't know why that keeps happening.
it's okay. Well, I got a quick question for you. So I'm sorry. Finish your thought, Nathan, and then I've got a question for you.
I was just gonna say we have to. We can't lose a game. We have to win everything, and then I don't think they can leave us out.
Right, but you know, being on that 2014 team, Nathan, did you guys feel that? I mean, you guys did have the one loss to Baylor, but I mean, when it comes to of everybody else that had the resume as far as one loss goes, TCU again on paper looked like the best team. Did you guys have any inkling at all that you guys were going to be let out of or left off of the initial college football playoffs back in 2014, especially after what you guys did to Iowa State at the end of the season?
Obviously, like, we were, like, worried about it. Like, our biggest thing was, like, the loss to Baylor is going to haunt us. Like, it is what it is. But we thought we had played so well since that. Yeah, we had, like, the West Virginia game, Kansas game, whatever it was. But we thought we had played well enough, especially beating Iowa State 55-3, in the last game of the season. We thought, oh, there's no way they drop us that. And, you know, especially because Baylor had lost to West Virginia so badly.
Right.
So we thought that would balance that out a little bit.
Yeah. And of course, that kind of goes back to the whole, quote, eyeball test thing, right? I mean, for the most part, TCU kind of passed the eyeball test in 2014. Yeah, there were a couple of little points in there as far as a couple of games that were a little bit closer, Kansas being one of them. But overall, I think TCU, especially down the stretch in 2014,
at that point, it was just a Big 12 game. We're not having a conference championship game, and then the Big 12 panicked, created one, which was stupid because now you could win now and lose the Big 12 championship game.
Right. Yeah. So definitely win out is going to be the magic combination here, but hopefully even a one loss Georgia or a one loss Tennessee doesn't necessarily jump the frogs this time around, and hopefully we see them there. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves, guys. Way ahead of ourselves. We obviously hope that TCU is in the top four at the end of the year, but of course we are only 8-0, and we still have several games left to play. So let's talk about predictions as the whatever the hell they're called come into town on Saturday at 11 a.m. You know, along with the busload of tumbleweeds from West Texas, let's talk about predictions for TCU versus Texas Tech. Nick, let's start with you. What do you think you're going to see out of this game, and then give me your score prediction?
I expect the offense to be explosive. Big adjustments to happen in the first half, you know. They like playing with fire in the first half, but I've been going with the reverse psychology all year long. Just because I don't want to jinx them. So I'm going ahead and say 45-42, Texas Tech running Rebels.
You're the only one I know that always goes against TCU. But if it's been working, it's been working. I can't question it.
Yeah,
Nathan,
it broke,
how about you?
Texas.
Yeah, amen.
I don't know. We're going to get their best shot. Everybody wants to beat us. I just do not want to lose to Tech. Like, I don't care if anybody else. I do not want to lose to Tech. Their fans suck. 45-30 TCU.
45-30 TCU. All right, Shannon.
And these are predictions, so I'm going to go with my thinking. And if we don't, this is one of those trap games, in my opinion, because and this is where I feel we're disciplined enough and we're not that team as we have before, but you always get those games where we overlook the incoming opponent because you're thinking about Texas. So I'm going to assume that's not going to happen. Just had to throw that out there. And we're going to play our best game yet. So I'm assuming we're going to come in, we're going to finally play the complete game. We're at home, and it is, you know, the Texas Tech, whatever their name, what the hell, the throwing freaking tortillas. And we're going to handle, guys. You know, I'll give them 20 to 56. We're going to stop. We're going to put the gas on them this side.
56 to 20. I like that offensive number. That's great. And I'm kind of thinking the same thing with you, Shannon, especially after watching that Texas Tech or whatever the heck they're called and Baylor game on Saturday night. I don't know if Texas Tech has an answer on offense right now. I mean, they had three quarterbacks throw five picks in that game. It truly was a team effort on that side of the ball. It was ugly. And, yeah, it didn't matter how many tortillas you threw on the field, Raider fans. It wasn't going to make things better. And Baylor, for the most part, the score did not really – was not indicative of how well – both defenses kind of played in that game, but I don't think the Raider defense is going to be able to hold TCU's offense back as long as they did Baylor. At the same time, I don't think the Tech offense is going to be able to handle the very fast, very strong, very hard-hitting TCU defense. So I'm going to go 42-17 TCU, and I think they're going to shut them out in the second half. I don't think Tech is going to see a single point in the third or the fourth quarter on Saturday.
You're going to see a backup quarterback?
Which one, on Tech or TCU?
Tech?
I think we'll probably see all three of them on Saturday.
Actually, Sean, I was thinking different. I was thinking they're going to score the points in the second half only because we're going to shut them out in the first half and we're going to rotate players and, you know, we have some young. So that's how I'm thinking. So that's my thing for this game. We're going to handle business from jump. And we're going to shut them boys out. We're going to rest some players and get some twos in there. And, you know, obviously they're twos. And so they can make a couple of mistakes. But I think we're going to handle business from jump.
I'd love to see that. If Tech's points are all coming from garbage time, great. Even better.
Yep.
I would love to see a TCU team, this TCU team, put together four solid quarters of football, or at least three solid quarters of football from just all their starters. That would be nice to see as well.
Be great. Yep.
It'd be nice to see Sam Jackson out there in the fourth quarter. Be great.
I'd love
to see that. But, you know, overall, I think TCU comes away with a win on Saturday. And to your point, Shannon, this is the prototypical, stereotypical trap game. But I think, Nathan, Shannon, what we've been talking about these last couple of weeks, this team doesn't look to seem to be phased. As far as looking forward, they seem to be taking things one week at a time, which is very cliche to say, but I think these guys are living it. And maybe they have a chance to prove it again.
Yeah,
definitely. So with that, we want to thank everybody who's listening to us out there. Of course, you can find the Killer Frogs on all the major podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Stitcher, even Spotify. And, of course, you can go to killerfrogs.com. You can read about TCU athletics from our favorite frog writers at Sports Illustrated at the Fan Zone. Of course, you can go to the Killer Frogs fan forum, sign up for a free account, and just let us know, what do you think your prediction is going to be for Saturday against the whatever the hell they're called when they come into town on Saturday. And with that, we have come to the end of the podcast. It's the time where we get our frogs up and we get to say,
go Frogs! Go Frogs! Beat the tortilla throwers!
Max Verhaeghe.